Hello and welcome to this episode of the Pastoral Restoration Podcast. I'm really excited, as I always say, but today has really been a long time coming, and I think you guys will all appreciate today's guest. Joan Hansen is here with us today, and Joan practices in Sioux Falls, and we'll get into a little bit more of kind of your current setting, Joan, and what, where, and how you operate on a day-to-day basis. But for all of our listeners and for anyone that is not familiar with Joan, I want to start off by first congratulating you, Joan. You were just awarded the Director's Dedication Award as part of our 2022 Spring Symposium. And Joan, I mentioned earlier before we started recording here that it was probably a long time coming. And you know, I truly believe that, and I truly believe, again, just to say it again, that people like you are a gift to all of the PRI community, and that's why I strive to involve, you know, your input and your, basically the opportunity we have today to just sit down and get to know you and some of that history, I think is powerful in its own right. You know, it's kind of gives merit to some of those individuals who are at the starting point of things and who haven't had that history with the Institute. They're just entering an Institute or a science and looking at things for the first time. So I hope it helps people like that, Joan. And again, congratulations on being, you know, formally recognized for that dedication, because it doesn't go unnoticed. And again, today's opportunity just gives us one more avenue to kind of, you know, show you off, if you will, to the PRI community. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, RJ. Thanks for inviting me on here. It is a privilege to be here. And that award was surprising, because pastoral restoration and the therapists involved are just, there's some amazing people. And that you picked me is I appreciate it. It's humbling.
Well, and likewise, like I said, we appreciate you and so many others. And that's my goal, is just to continue to expound on that. So without further delay, Joan, I want to start off the conversation by spending a short amount of time just getting to know some of that history. And then we'll get into some of your more, you know, input on the PRI climate and what's helped you and what has benefited you as a clinician for how you practice and what some of the resources are that you utilize and things like that. So if you don't mind, just, you know, kind of like we briefly talked again before this conversation about just those early days of figuring out what the heck you want to do in life and where you're headed and why you're there. What drew you to physical therapy and really, you know, this type of healthcare? And are you now where you thought you'd be, if that makes sense?
Okay. All right. Well, even in high school, I knew I wanted to be a physical therapist. I don't know how I knew about physical therapy. We didn't have any family friends that were a physical therapist. I didn't have any physical therapy until after I already knew I wanted to be a physical therapist. But after my senior year of high school, I was in a car accident and I fractured my patella. And then I ended up having a lot of physical therapy, which was helpful, because then I got to know the physical therapists at the hospital I work for now. And anyway, I had, people who could make recommendations. So it was easy for me to get into physical therapy school, because I had all these hours, because then they hired me to work on the weekends as an aide. And so I had those hours, I had the contacts, I had the experience. So getting into physical therapy school, that just made it so much easier. So at the time, our state didn't have a program. So I chose to apply to Mayo and Des Moines and North Dakota. And I really didn't want to go to North Dakota, because it's cold enough here. And I went to Des Moines and I really didn't like it. And so I was really put all my hope into Mayo. And so that happened. And I was glad about that because it was 22 months straight through done. And the entire second year was all working as a physical therapist under a mentor. You could pick six different areas of expert, you know, to work in. And so it was, you had a lot of hands-on and a lot of different areas. And so, and, you know, I felt that I was going to the best place in the area, that I would see all this amazing stuff at Mayo. But really, I tell people, you go to PT school, you learn the basics. And it doesn't make you an expert in anything. And you get out. And I tell my patients now that I don't do anything that I learned in PT school other than how, you know, the anatomy and how to measure joints and those kinds of things. And everything I use now, I learned from your dad. So, so I went to college and I got an athletic training degree. So I always thought I was going to be in sports med. That was going to be my, that was going to be my role. And, when I graduated from PT school, I took the job in Sioux Falls that paid the best, and bad choice. I hated it. And I had to sign a non-compete to have that job. And so after a year and a half of hating it, I had to do traveling physical therapy. So I did that for 9 months. And then the place that held my non-compete sold to the hospital. And so I was able to come back. So my third traveling job was in a nursing home, and I ended up working in a nursing home for 5 years when I never thought I would ever step into a nursing home ever. But it's challenging, and I do like a good challenge. So I did the nursing home for 5 years, and I was working for NovaCare, and then they closed in our area. But even before they closed, I knew I was going to open my own practice. So it was a divine intervention because I was ready to put in my resignation when they said they were closing. So I got a severance package at the exact same time I was opening my own practice. It worked out beautifully. So I built out a clinic and I had an orthopedist in the same building. And so that's where I started in 1999. I graduated in 92. So I opened my practice in 7 years in 1999 and worked in that building, and then was able to buy the building that was on the same property and buy into the building. And so move my practice over here to where I am now. And then because of postural restoration, the hospital liked what we were doing. And so some of the physicians went to administration, and they were also looking for a different kind of physical therapy to put in their new spine center that they were going to have on campus. And so they heard about postural restoration and they wanted it. And so that's kind of a long story too, but Jill Buchans and I were over here working together, and they ended up taking Jill Buchans onto campus, and I stayed here, and so sold out to the hospital in 2008. And I was very angry at the time about that because I didn't want that. But again, in 2008, the economy tanked, and I figure again, that was divine intervention of, you know, this is just what should happen. And so 2008, I started working for Sanford. And although there's always more red tape when you're working for a hospital, it's been fine. They still allow me to do my thing over here and really allow me to do what I think is right over here. And so I have a lot of independence over here, and it's been good.
Well, if you don't mind, I'll probably go back to some of that, but I want to, you covered a decent chunk of time there, Joan, and I appreciate it. I want to backpedal a little bit to kind of where your introduction of PRI fit into that clinical journey. Because I think, you know, shortly around the time of starting your own clinic, it might've been, you know, within a year or two, I don't know which came first, But you kind of mentioned, you know, you always had the goal in mind of opening your own clinic. Shortly after you did, you had this opportunity, you know, with Sanford to come up and ended up merging. So a lot of things kind of just fell into place there that, you know, whether you planned on it or not, you know, you spent 5 years in a nursing home to circle back to get back to where you are. And the other thing that's cool, Joan, is I feel like, you know, there's not too many of these types of settings that really truly exist, how you have it existing, if that makes sense. You know, your opportunity to still have potential for growth, still be able to do things like PRI or any other training you want to do underneath an umbrella of a large hospital system like Sanford. One, I think, you know, just from the outside, obviously you have days you want to pull your hair out, as a lot of people do, but from the outside, just saying that, you know, it's a great thing to work for someone willing to let you do that. And to have that sustainable over all these years, you know, you're talking about early 2000s and yes. We're now in 2022. And the fact that you're, you know, still doing your thing over here, like you said, yeah. It's really cool because I think a lot of people out there wish they could have that opportunity or maybe they're in systems similar to big, you know, similar to your hospital, but they may not have that freedom. So
yes,
it is really a gift. But going back to your exposure to PRI, walk us through around that time, 1999. I kind of know, you know, because of your involvement with the Institute, you happen to not a lot of others, but so many other guests I've had on the podcast have similar stories with protonics and yes. This device you'll talk about. So what was your first exposure? And then again, did it come before or after that kind of leap of faith to start your own clinic? And how did that, you know, here you are taking a protonics course for the first time while considering starting your own clinic. And now you're like, oh crap. What do I do? Like, how do I make this thing work?
Yes. Yes.
Walk us through that first PRI exposure.
Okay. So June of 99, I opened my own clinic. And in October of 99 was my protonics course through my MP rep. So she came in and said, you know, we're offering this course on Saturday. It's, you know, it's only $99. And I was like, are you kidding me? It's Saturday, you know? And I said, no, I'm not taking it. And she's like, you know what? I really want you to take it. I'll pay for it if you go. I was like, oh, fine, you know, and thank God, you know, because they used me for an example because I'd had that fractured right patella and still put the brace on the left side. And I'm like, what is going on, you know? And it was, I believe it was Shane that, you know, used to work for Ron and went through that protonics course on, it was just a 1 day course, but rocked my world. So there I am, mild kid, January of 2001. So 3 months later, I'm taking my first posture restoration class. Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, because, you know, you put this brace on the left leg, my pain's on the right leg, and it did what for my arm? You know, it's just so eye-opening
jump in if correct me if I'm wrong, I guess, but you know, still today when you look back at protonics and the avenue it gave this institute as a device, I'm kind of stuck this year on two because of the Huresca clinic has kind of they're calling it the year of two of 2022, but this protonic device allowed even clinicians such as yourself who are, you know, pretty at that time, you know, you're out of school and you had some practice, but it allowed people to understand too, for the first time, like, okay, my leg, my knee, my patella pain is on the right. I'm being treated on the left. Like that alone that's the start. I mean, that is the starting point of us. And I think what I was getting at is, when you look at any PRI orthotic today, 20 years later, it really comes down to that same start point. You know, what is this appliance or brace or, you know, protonics device going to allow you to sense for the first time? Back then it was a left hamstring. And I think, you know, that's one of the things I'm trying to really get out there as well, is this thing behind orthotics and appliances and devices and things that go on eyes and in mouths and in nostrils and ears. And it's like a song, oh my. But, you know, it's really just all about that first experience, because once you as a clinician knew that that device was targeting something that you have no idea why or how or what, yeah, it's like, boom, let's go. So from there, you know, again, you were starting a clinic, and I guess at this point, what did that first mile at the time, we only had, I believe, a combined myokinematic postural course. So it was kind of lower extremity, but also brought in some postural concept, like respiratory concepts, if I remember correctly.
Well, I looked back in my records, and I wrote down myokin. Yeah. So
maybe it was. And like I said, at one point the two were combined, but whatever version you took, what did it change for you going back to that clinic that you're trying to start? And how did it, you know, how did that device, you know, cause you to start questioning things?
So we got some of the braces and we brought them into the clinic, and we started doing the repositioning exercises and you know, just trying to figure it out, because, you know, all those little points are so important. Like you've got to get the setup right, you got to get the breathing right. And so I had a chance to hire someone, Chad Lossing, who had been doing working with protonics, and so he came to Sioux Falls. And so it's so helpful to have another person to work with to figure this out. It's hard on your own.
And that again can be applied to the bigger conversation of, you know, if you take protonics out of it, you know, if you only had a Chad Lossing for, you know, the Moo appliance and, you know, yes, a pair of shoes. And yes, so if you think about it, big picture, again, you're still doing the same thing today. It's just, you know, we know more now, and we have more of those protonic devices around.
Yes,
through other things like Lori's shoe list and oral appliances and visual system integration. So in a sense, anyone new to PRI is still having that protonics moment. And that's, yes, kind of what, like, I want people to be aware of and cognizant of, is like these stories of you and so many other guests that I've had on from back in the early 2000s, mm-hmm, are not all that different from the stories today. We're just a little bit further along. So again, I think it's worth noting. And like I said, you're common with the other guests I've had on throughout the podcast, and the fact that that protonics device really not only opened up doors for us, but opened up minds for these clinicians like yourself to just get started at thinking at things differently. So, yes, one other question about kind of your clinical setting there. And again, it's not often that someone can look back on it. You know, you're now looking back on 20 years of clinical practice through your own private care. So congratulations on that itself. But how has, and I think I wrote this down later on, but when you look at how you founded your clinic around the same start that you began looking at the science of PRI, and I don't mean to, you know, Joan, there's a lot of other things that go into a clinic than incorporating PRI. You know, you know that, I know that, all of our listeners know that. I'm not trying to blanket state anything. I understand that there's so many other things that goes into that clinic. But what did PRI over the years, and as you've continued, I think, Joan, they mentioned it during your award recipient, you know, during your award receiving, that you're on like your 33rd course. And we're sitting here saying, man, did we do something wrong? Or is she still learning something, you know? And I know you pick up something new every time, but what has your progression through the science, or better yet, how has your progression through the science influenced your private clinic over the years? And I know you're influenced by the hospital and you have other influence, like I mentioned, but in an ideal world, you know, where you could take a course and go back and play with it and go implement it and go take it to those patients, how have you done that over the years as you have taken 33 courses? Because, you know, of course you're going to hear something new, but what has your private clinic allowed you to do that maybe other, you know, other people are looking at saying, man, how did you do it? A, under the umbrella of a hospital, B, yeah, you're in private practice for 20 some years under that umbrella. C, you've taken, you know, you're so active with the science and the coursework throughout your career. It's really, you know, it really is impressive, Joan. And I just, if you could just shed some light on kind of how the two melded together for you.
Sure. Well, and I'm blessed here that in my own practice and then ongoing with the hospital that I can schedule as I see fit. So typically I get 45 minutes with a patient, but if someone comes from out of town, I get 90. So, or, you know, I can schedule whatever I need. And we have never had PT assistants. We've never had a PT aide. It is one-on-one. And I don't know how anybody does it any other way, because when you learn postural restoration and it's very biomechanical, it's very hands-on, you have to be watching them, making sure that they're in the right position, breathing in the right phase. And that takes time. And so it's got to be one-on-one. We're lucky here that just like in the Heresca clinic, that we have a door we shut. It's just us two in that room. We can focus and really work on these exercises so that they get them done correctly at home. I just don't know how anybody else does it with, you know, you see them for 15 minutes and then the PTA takes them in. I don't know how that works.
It's hard.
So we're blessed here that we can have the time that we need to spend with that patient. If we need to schedule more, we can do that. We can do whatever frequency that we can get them in. I mean, the clinic is busy, so we probably can't see them as often as we would want to, but when they leave here, the exercises that they learn, they should know well, because it is one-on-one with that patient in a closed, quiet room where we can really focus on those. But, you know, starting with Myokin, and first of all, I should say, I've taken Myokin 3 times. You don't just take any of these classes once, or at least I couldn't, because, you know, you can only absorb, like you said, so much in one sitting, and you go back and apply it and you get it. And then you go back and you pick up more and you apply it, you get it. So for me, it was a real, like, you know, okay, I'm ready for more. Okay, I'm ready for more. Okay, ready for more. And I need that repetition, and I need those around me to, you know, bounce ideas off of each other. So again, to be a postural restoration therapist in a clinic where there's nobody else, I feel for those people, because it's so helpful to have another pair of eyes, another set of ideas on, you know, when you're stuck with a patient, like, where do we go from here? And because everybody has their favorite exercises, we got a 1,000 exercises in those drawers, but what's the right one for that patient? So I just hope other people are surrounded by other postural restoration therapists that they can boing ideas off of, I guess.
Well, and you know, the one thought I have is, you're absolutely right. And I think, you know, if you flip the coin on people who do utilize, you know, there's obviously you are coming from your background and your setting, but my next guest could come from their setting and say, man, all we use is, you know, we've got five PTAs on staff that we love them. They're up to speed. They do great. And so, you know, Joan, it's one of those things where it is hard. The time, the one-on-one time, the investment of both you and your patient, it's hard to do in other settings. That being said, you know, one cool thing about PRI is we can do it. You know, we can do an activity with our in-laws on a Saturday and just show them a technique, or we can do it with a patient and they can leave. And, you know, if that's all they get, that's all they got. But So it's cool to be able to integrate it at whatever level. Getting back to you. So, you know, again, you take a course and that's essentially what you're doing. You're going and taking the material and implementing it for the first time. And you may only be implementing, you know, let's say you really honed in on 40% of that material over 2 days. And you come back and you get another 20% there, and you come back and all of a sudden you've taken it three times, but every time you've come back with a little bit more of the puzzle. So that has power to it. And I'm glad you said, as many people say, you know, if you have the opportunity, re-listen to something, retake it, relearn it, take it from a different instructor.
Yes.
The one comment I had is, you know, you have been around the Institute essentially since its foundation, and even the people that you've heard the material from has changed over the years. Absolutely. And that alone has probably, you know, caused things to either be learned differently or something was said in a different way. So just the people around you. And I guess what I'm getting at is kind of leads us into our next topic I wanted to cover is, you know, you were kind of on that island for a while. You know, you always had support from, you know, you had Jill you were working alongside, or you had support and open-mindedness around you.
Yes.
But, you know, Joan, you had to search for it, and you continue to search for it, and you continue to outreach to others. And it takes effort is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. And
even when you're on a true island, you know, let's say you're down, we have some islands right now down in Tennessee, and we have a PRC moving to Alabama. We're so excited to get a PRC in Alabama.
Nice.
We have some true islands that exist. My point is, you are an individual who has been fortunate to have some open-minded clinicians around you.
Yes.
But you have continued to remain very present in the PRI community. And most of the time that has not been in your next, you know, the next room over. You know, you have clinicians you work with, but you're also so active on Privy and in the PRI community virtually, whether it be through emails or phone calls to other clinicians, or, you know, hey, I'm going to call up my friend on the East Coast. She was in the same PRC class as me, and we're going to chat about this patient.
Yes.
You know, you do what you can to stay connected, but that's kind of what I want to get into next is you obviously became certified as a PRC in 2005. So that was a few years after your first course. But if you want to tie the two together, I guess, kind of talk about why you went through credentialing, and I'm kind of marrying the two, if you will, to kind of your involvement in the PRI community, but not only through credentialing and through that process, but just since then, you know, that alone was 15 years ago. Since then, how have you really tried or strived to stay involved, and how have things like Privy and a Google group or emailing other colleagues or talking to Ron or Jen, or what are the ways that you get off of that island, you know, when you feel like you're on it, and how has those things benefited you?
Well, I'm going to go back early on. One of the things I would do is I would go down and spend the day with your dad. I would, you know, there was a program where you could, I don't know how much it cost, you go down and you follow him for a day. And one time I was there when he had just turned 50 and he came in saying, "Oh, the doctor said I got to lose 10 pounds." But that same day, Lori Thompson was in the clinic as a patient. So I got to meet Lori. And he said, "Oh, you'll enjoy meeting Lori because she's from North Dakota. She hadn't moved down there yet. And you're from South Dakota." And so that was the first time I met Lori. But those days were wonderful to see Ron in action and to really see it applied in the clinic. That was so valuable for me. So I did that several times. And then I would travel down with my patients and have them see him. And that was extremely valuable too, to see what am I missing here? And so those days were valuable. Then, you know, moving forward through the courses, I wanted to be in that very first credentialing class. And I sort of lost track of the time of when my application was due. Realized, I think Janie was like, "Hey, I thought you were going to sign up for this." And said, "Oh, yes, I would like to do that." And so I didn't have much time to put that all together. Then my computer died and I hand wrote the whole thing. And not sure they could read my writing, and they could tell it was definitely a rushed
So event. You're the reason why we have to have printed copies now.
Probably. Oh dear. I'm embarrassed for whoever read my application. And they were very much justified in telling me to wait a year. So I waited a year and I put a lot more effort into my application the following year. And so I was very happy to be a part of that 2005 group, which also included Lori Thompson and Jen Poulin. And there was, I think, 9 of us or something, but such a valuable experience. You know, people get so nervous about going, but it's just like taking a course. Again, there's so much learning involved in that process of, yes, you have to, you know, answer all those questions, but the discussion around those questions, and there's more than one right answer, you know, so you hear it from so many different people. And, you know, in our class, people were from all around the country and have different favorite exercises. And so going through those exam questions was so valuable, just that discussion. And then we spent a lot of time going over the manual techniques and Ron demonstrating to the rest of us. And then we practice and demonstrate. And oh, gosh, it was a really good couple of days and just a very valuable experience.
Well, and you know, it really is set up to be that. And I think the more we can share your story and other people's story, it really, everyone that leaves is leaving with a different appreciation than they come with. You know, you come expecting a formal, you know, it's a testing process, but it's so much more. And I think everyone kind of echoes that same viewpoint after coming and going through it. But, you know, you talk about 9 other people, and kind of to get us back into that aspect of involvement after that process, you know, what did, I guess, the following, you know, what did that process do for you in relation to just confidently going back and saying, you know, okay, maybe I know this, I can do this. I'm a certified clinician. I have 9 other people out there that I can rely on. Did it do anything for you clinically as far as, like, you know, helping you better appreciate techniques? Or you talked about having the opportunity to go over techniques and one-on-one time with Ron and other faculty that help out. But I guess, where did things go after that, Joan?
Yeah. So sometime after that, somebody started the Google group, and that has been so helpful for so many people that, you know, especially those on an island, you know, like I'm seeing this kind of patient. I've never seen this kind of patient before. I'm struggling. What have y'all tried and what's worked? And so people are very willing to put out, hey, try this, you know, get back to us. Did it work? So that is a wonderful sounding block for a lot of people, and encourage people to be a part of that, put their questions out there. And because there's a lot of expertise out there. I've also tried to pull together a group of people who are doing postural restoration and Shroth, and how are we merging that together? What does that look like for best outcomes for our scoliosis patients? Y'all know there, I love Privy. I'm a huge advocate for Privy. How many episodes are there now? I've watched them all.
250, I think, around that.
250. So, I mean, that's every week. I just think that's another, what, hour or 2 hours of learning. And then if you get stuck, you can go back through there and go, you know, I remember him talking about this in one of these privies, and you plug in one of those words, and one of those privies will pop up and you can review it. And I've just found those very, very helpful. And the techniques and the questions I've sent in, my fair share of questions,
and it generates a new episode.
So. Yes. Yes. So, I think the privies are very valuable and just keep you connected, keep you thinking along lines that maybe you hadn't considered before. And he can do topics that, you know, we don't need a whole weekend course about it, but, you know, let's spend an hour and chat about something that's niggling, you know?
Yep. Well, and you know, Joan, the goal of Privy and, you know, we don't administrate the Google group, and it's kind of set up to be that way because we want that open environment of PRI clinicians and so once in a while we'll comment if we have input, but we don't run that group. If anyone's interested in that group, they can reach out to Heather Carr, and I'm hoping to have Heather on in the near future. But the resources we do create, and really, if you want to just think of the goal of, I guess this is me saying my goal. I think we all are on similar paths here at the Institute, and we all have the same goal. But what we're trying to do through Privy and what those conversations hopefully allow is, you kind of mentioned it a few times, you know, there's 1,000 techniques out there. What technique is right for this one patient? So it's one technique out of 1,000, and maybe you need a handful out of 1,000. The cool thing is Ron's techniques that he's going to talk about to you, you know, let's say it's a cranial repositioning or sphenosacral, tertiary level stuff, or maybe he goes to this high level stuff right away. There's thousands of people out there that aren't even at that level yet. So yes. Privy allows him to get into those conversations.
Yes.
But on the flip side of things, Joan, what we're trying to do is have people go through the same history you have, and the same, you can't go through Ron's career and you can't go through Joan's career and you can't walk in someone else's shoes, but you have to be able to know why, not why he loves that technique. You know, loving a technique, you can love a technique for so many reasons that, oh, it's the quickest way to target an ad, you know, whatever it may be. It's not about why you love the technique. It's why are you choosing that technique? Because your clinical history and mindset and how you think as a clinician is so different from Ron or from Torin or from, so there is a lot of value in watching someone clinically practice. You talked about shadowing. We have some mini residency programs we're really excited about that more and more clinicians are offering. But there's obviously power to that. The bigger thing is through Privy and through other material is how can we better help the clinician such as yourself determine why that technique is best for them and their patient, not Ron and his patient, or not you know, not Lori and her patient, but your patient in front of you. Everyone's watching these videos with a perception and a perspective. So what you get from a privy could be totally different from your colleague. But again, getting that reasoning of, okay, we're not selecting a technique because it's Ron's favorite. Well, it must be really good if it's Ron's favorite. Well, no, it turns out Joan's favorite might be able to do the same exact thing as Ron's favorite. And Joan's favorite does it for these reasons because of this patient. So that is the challenge. And I think, you know, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but over the course of your 20 years, you know, that is what it gets down to, is knowing and appreciating why. And right. I think that's probably why you continue to take courses. But I don't know, again, if you have any thoughts on just technique selection and how you yourself over the years have gone through that kind of battle of, yes. You know, okay, I know this is a good technique. I've heard Ron talk about it 20 times. Why is it not working for my patient? You know, yes. So it is a battle, and new people that are listening, a lot of the times are put off by the scope of PRI and by the fact that, you know, maybe I'm just trying to apply it to my strength setting, or I'm just trying to help a high school athlete. How the heck am I going to pick a technique, you know, when there's 1,000 out there? So any input you have on just, you know, what worked for you and what clinically over the years you have done to get to know those techniques better, and better yet, to decide which ones to pick.
Yes. Well, I have the benefit that as of this month, 30 years practicing as a physical therapist, and I would say most of those, you know, doing as far as anyway, outpatient, doing postural restoration, it's just practice and patience. And I still don't always pick the right technique because you'll do that technique with someone, they just don't get it. They can't engage. And you just go, you know what? Let's go to plan B, and we're going to use this other technique. And that still happens, and that's okay. Cause you've got to find you know, when you have a new eval, you don't know that patient yet. And so you may pick the wrong technique at first, and then you move forward. But you just keep checking your tests. What's going to get that leg to drop, that arm to internally rotate, that neck to side bend? I mean, it's just practice. And with time, you learn how those patients are compensating, you know, in the common compensations and how to deal with that and be patient and realize that it's the breathing that fixes these patients. And, you know, when you're coming from PT school and you haven't heard a lot about breathing, you don't get it. I mean, you just don't understand how that breath in expansion diaphragm works. And so I tell my patients that I fix 90% of people with breathing, and they look at me strange early on, and then, you know, they get it. But I, if they've had physical therapy before, nobody's asked them, what are you feeling? Can you feel that air come in? Or can you even just feel the muscle working? You know, they don't get a lot of these basics. And when you do this, it's so fulfilling to me when you treat a patient that's been treated 5 other places and they go, nobody's looked at me like this. And I learned more today than I have in all those other months of physical therapy. That is so fulfilling. And I just go, thank you, Ron. I'm going down the right path. So,
and he would sit here and tell you that path is your path is yours. And that's kind of what I said earlier is, you know, it doesn't, someone else's path, you just really can't extrapolate, you know, across the board within PRI or with anything, because gosh, again, you know, your go-to favorite activities and how you even evaluate the patient and your consideration of breathing and starting with the basics. one of the things, Joan, that I wanted to really highlight about you today, and I know this is about you after all, but you know, really the one thing that we all of us love about you and your clinical heart and soul of being a clinician is, you know, we're not going to jump to your cranial face. You know, we're not going to jump to the head and the neck. We're not going to even jump to whether or not you may or may not, you know, need grounding, or guess what? We'll probably look at your shoes maybe in a few visits or maybe the first visit, but just getting people to understand breath and airflow, and let alone sensing the new breath that they're given because they've never really used it that way before. I think, you know, it's not a dilemma. It's not a problem. It's not a bad thing, but there is a notion right now within people new to PRI, because we are so integrative now as an institute. I think people try to make that jump from breathing to cranial facial torsions and side bends of the head and neck. You know, they make that jump almost immediately, and they're trying to do the full picture of system integration from day one without going through your 22 years of clinical journey. And so I'm not saying you have to spend 22 years at this. I'm just saying you are someone that trusts the process. You trusted it. You have trusted it, but it takes time. You said it earlier. It is frustrating. We talk to people every day that are really frustrated with this science, because it's forcing you to do things differently, and it's forcing your patients to do things differently. That's who it's all about. It's not really about you at the end of the day. You're forcing your patients to sense something new and different.
Yes.
And that's hard as a clinician, because then they're kind of frustrated with you. And long story short, what I'm getting at is you are so good at not making that jump. I mean, appreciating the fact that breathing alone could take one whole session. It could take two or three, four or five, six sessions. And now you're starting on, you know, repositioning. So that's just a comment. And I don't know if you have anything to add to that, but it's just one of the things I see and we see is so many new clinicians at that point in time trying to really do it all. And we all want to get there, but first of all, not everyone needs it. And second of all, sometimes people just need to learn how to breathe. And that's really, really what you were saying. So,
Yeah. You know, we talked about Privy and some of the benefits. What we haven't talked about is once you get certified, after one of my favorite courses, interdisciplinary integration, the Pasha Restoration Certified Therapists have their own class. And we spend a day giving talks. And this last year was no different. And again, so beneficial. Lori Thompson gave a talk. Julie Blandon gave a talk. And then shared their PowerPoints, which then I share with my staff. I get so many between Privy's and Julie and Lori's talk, I have so much material to share with my staff, and not enough time, you know. So there's just so much I get out of this that, because I got to pass all this on. They don't get as much interaction with postural restoration as I do, and I'm the one that's got to share this and make sure that they're understanding it. And so I just feel like you guys and the PRI Nation provides so much stuff that you don't have to recreate. You've got it. You can then pass it on, or not just pass it on, but teach it to your own staff without recreating it.
Yep. Well, and again, there's a lot of resources today. You know, we spent some time talking about a few of them. You know, there's several others, and there's a lot more today than there was 22 years ago. And I think that's part, in some way, Joan, and our listeners, I hope you don't take this wrongly, but that's part of the problem, right? Like we have all of it at our disposals. And this isn't just PRI, this is kind of open discussion, but that's part of the problem is people want to jump to the full package. You know, we have all these resources, yes, all these appliances, all these integrative, you know, techniques and courses for integration. And you have it all, like you said, you have it, you know, yeah, you just have to figure out how to disseminate it to the people you work with and your patients and figure out how you're going to make a system out of it. So we try our best to do that for people, but you're absolutely right. I mean, for anyone, I think by the time you go through credentialing, you kind of know about the power of the community and the people around you. A lot of the times by the time people are here to go through that, it seems like they've already had some of that influence. But you mentioned one thing that I know has been a big influence in your life, and that's the integration symposium, our annual interdisciplinary integration. And Joan, I don't know off the top of my head if they mentioned it this past April, but I think you've been at probably the past 15 of them. You know, I think we're on like number 15. You've probably been at every one.
I missed one, and I still feel badly for that. Because this is it's a one shot. You know what? You only have one shot to get this information and to meet these people. I just find it so valuable, and I can't stand missing something over there, you know. So I'm always driven back.
Yeah. And you know, there again, you mentioned it that they're only offered once, and you know, now we're fortunate to have more international attendance and just attendance in general since we've gone virtual and offered that. But again, over the years, they've been offered once a year, and you either hear it or you don't, type of a thing. And so I know you've been here, you've been a constant kind of, you know, presence at those. And you mentioned the following day of integrating just with your PRC and PRT clinicians, you know, credentialed providers integrating together on that Saturday typically. But again, it's a community that you're involved with that helps keep you off that island, if you will. So right. I know, you know, you guys have a lot of fun, and we were very happy to take part in those every year. But outside of that collaboration with your credentialed peers, you know, I just want to touch on the fact that of what you mentioned, you know, every year, you know, some years we had 4, 5, 6 other presenters on topics, vibration and vocology and strength. You know, we had one year of just performance. And I'm going to really put you on the spot, Joan. If you can remember, like, just a few of those symposiums that really struck to you and what you do clinically. Again, mm-hmm. This isn't a leading question. I'm just truthfully curious to you as a clinician for so long. I guess a better question or a better way to ask this is what material do you fall back on? You know, mm-hmm. we had some drums pulled out a few years ago and some singing and
yeah, they're right music. Back.
Yeah. So for you, I guess just talk a little bit about how those symposiums give you, maybe it was just a drum set, you know, maybe it allows you to bring those drums back into your clinic and play with pressure through the hands, whatever it may be, vibration. But how have those symposiums allow you to get yet a new angle on things, whether it be through drumming or dancing? Like, a lot of us had never salsa danced before, and here we have Neil come in and teach us the salsa dance.
Right.
So just for you, I think it's just kind of fun to reminisce on what yes. some of the more memorable tools, if you want to think about PRI tools in your toolbox, what are some of the other friends to your drums up there on the shelf?
Yes. Oh gosh. Some of my favorites, sleep, you know, if you have a patient who doesn't sleep well and you can help them, oh my goodness, you know,
at the time it was about frequency and whole, there was a program out called Whole Tones or different, we were doing different earbud stuff at the time.
Well, and this was separate from that one. See, that's okay. The one I missed was the frequency one, which I see it's killing. You're killing me. But there was one on sleep, you know, just looking at obstructive sleep apnea and how dentistry is involved with that. That's a passion of mine. Love that. Parkinson's, I thought this doesn't apply to me. I'm going to go because I love these. And I was so, it really did impact me and push me to now I want to work with these people because I feel like no one else is working with them on this alternating fashion. And so now I'm going to go, we get to do a community service for Sanford for a day. So I'm going to go rock steady boxing and I'm trying to get our gym to have a Parkinson's gym and push them in that direction because we're a medical facility. Like our wellness center should have a Parkinson's gym. You know, what a wonderful add-on. So the Parkinson's one I love, the sleep one I love. Ron brought, his name is zoomed out of my head. I think it's Paul Hodges.
Yeah.
Oh man, his research is remarkable. They brought him all the way from Australia.
His research helps all of us all the time.
Oh my gosh. And where else are you going to get stuff on? I mean, the early ones would do, you know, maybe Dr. Coffin would talk for a half a day and then Heidi or Dr. Nedro. And so that was just early on vision stuff. Like what do I need to know about that? You know? So, there's just so much good stuff.
Yeah. It's our chance once a year to really dive into those topics and, you know, it'll evolve and it may look different 5 years from now than it did last year. But, the goal, you know, again, the goal is to, and I think Joan, to kind of wrap up the conversation on those symposiums and kind of integration as a whole and the big picture PRI, one of the things, you know, I get a lot of feedback every day online and various sources and social media and emails, but one of the things that I think there's this stigma, and I don't really know where it came from, but there's this stigma that like people that aren't exposed to PRI, some of them have, where they view it and they say, well, those PRI people think, you know, it's their way or the highway, or they think, you know, they're doing all this cool stuff, but what's wrong with what I'm doing? And so what I'm getting at is like PRI as an institute, and I think there's no one better that can echo this than someone like you who has literally been here all along. But PRI is not telling anyone like the way you're doing things is wrong or bad. PRI is just saying like, hey, here's some more cool things that you could be doing with that.
Yes.
So whether it be those, you know, Paul Hodges and all these individuals that we bring in to just give you a glimmer of like what dance could do for a PRI program, or yes, what could audiology do for a specific PRI patient, or yes, what can boxing do for your Parkinson's patients. So it's not that like we're sitting here as an institute and as a community saying like, you know, you need to do this or else type of an attitude. No, right, we're just trying to help people, clinicians, personal trainers, massage therapists, anyone and everyone working with position, i.e. also the patient.
Yeah. Yes.
They're the ones that have to take it home. But we're just saying, you know, there is more and you don't have to address it. You're not going to be comfortable. I can sit here and I'm young, Joan. I'm not experienced. I'm not a clinician like you. As we talked about earlier, I'm just trying to help people put it all together and provide resources to do so. But I know for one thing, I can sit here and tell you, you will be confused.
Right. Right.
That's like, if there's one fact, you will have questions.
Yes.
And so no, we're not telling you, you know, it's not like here's all the answers. We're just saying, let's start asking the questions.
Yes. So. Early on, RJ, meeting with, when I would go down and follow your dad, we were having lunch one day and he said, we don't bash anyone. All therapists out there are doing the best they can with the knowledge that they have. We're all caregivers. You know, don't bash anybody, but just, you know, say they were helping you, but maybe we should think about this and let's look at this and try these techniques and just, yeah, I mean, just be respectful to all the other therapists out there who are doing the best that they can.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you were that therapist. And
that's I totally was. Like, I feel like all those patients should get their money back from what I did in the first years.
And so it circles back to kind of our conversation about breathing and just like appreciating the basics. And like, again, breathing is going to be a new thing for people. And let alone breathing is just this one little piece. I mean, breathing is a huge part of what we do, but breathing is just a little piece of our institute. And so, yes, we're a breathing institute. Yes, we're a posture institute. But again, we're just trying to help people see things differently and help patients sense things differently. And someone sitting in front of me like you, who has done that for over 20 years, 30 years. Really, again, Joan, I know we tell you this, but you are really someone who's done it, you know, and I'm not trying to say you've reached your pinnacle. I'm not by any means saying like, oh, she's done it. She's there, because I don't think you will ever be there in your mind.
Nope.
And that's what's cool about all of the people in PRI is you're a lifelong learner and you always will be. But when it comes down to the route you took and the way you did it and the consistency of it, there's not a lot of people in today's world, my generation being one of them. Again, it's a generalization, but there's a lot of people that want to get to that 2022 Joan Hansen without being the 2001 version.
Right.
So, again, that's really the greatest gift you provide to your patients, to your clinic staff around you. And Joan, I'm sitting in front of you, and you know, I hardly know you. Type of a, you know, I we know you, we love you, but we're not around you day to day, is what I'm saying. But we know that's who you are because of the 20-year history you've had. And so, again, I would really recommend anyone, if you can get one thing from this conversation, just, you know, take Joan's career as a, you know, really, Joan, you may not want to be that person, but you know, you look at your career and that's really a true clinician who is just trying to do the best for their patient. And that's what we're all trying to do. And that's why I think I was so excited about having this conversation, because it gets lost, you know, it does. It that type of a mentality gets lost in all the other BS out there. So what it gets right down to is what Ron told you back in 1999 or 2000 is, you guys are all caregivers and you're all doing the best you can. And by the way, there is no right technique. There is no right way. There is no, you know, one way. It's the year of two. So let's do things a different way, as we've always been doing and as you've always done. So Joan, that I really am appreciative of you. And just to, again, tell all of our listeners, you know, what you do for us and the example you set of being a clinician at heart. I want to just wrap up, Joan, and more or less, you know, have you share any other things about you that our listeners would love to know and that I would love to know. So when you're not in the clinic, you know, we're sitting here on a Friday afternoon. One of the questions I had for you, Joan, is kind of selfish because I have a kind of a fun question. We often joke around here at the Institute is like, all of our families know what we do, but they don't know what we do. They know how, they know where we work, but they don't know how we work. Yeah. So when you have some kids and you go through life, but when you're not in the clinic, like, how do you, you know, maybe you don't, maybe you shut the door and leave it at work, but how do you personally use PRI to recenter yourself? Or, you know, what do you like to do in your free time, whether it be hiking or golf, you know, whatever it may be? How do you share your passion about PRI within your own life and your own personal time?
Sure.
And specifically, does your family think you're as crazy as all of our, as all of us?
Yes. Yes. Everyone who knows me, I'm constantly looking at people, you know, when my family's around me, and I'll say, oh, now, are you watching that person? Do you see how they swing that right foot out to the side? Or do you see how they don't swing their right arm? And I'm like, you got to swing your right arm. Like, you're all swinging your right arm, right? Or, you know, footwear, I'm constantly looking at my friends going, what are you wearing? Like, do you need help? Can I give you some recommendations? You know, my girlfriends are like sending them exercises. In fact, this last weekend, my daughter's pregnant. I am going to be a grandma. I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you. My daughter is pregnant. My niece is pregnant, and they're both having low back pain. So after the family dinner, we go downstairs. I got them doing their exercises and worried about footwear. It's constant. I'm constantly pointing things out and the little things that you weave into people's lives, good shoes and swinging your arms can make more of a difference than they even understand. Last night, we were having happy hour with my mother-in-law, and I was talking about nasal breathing, and it's like, you guys need to be nasal breathing. Are you breathing during your nose with your nose at day and night? We're having this conversation of how do you breathe through your nose at night if you're not breathing through your nose at night?
Wait a second, Joan, I've never done that at all.
I know. So I'm making them tape their mouths shut at night, and they all think I'm crazy, but I just, you know, for those, your family and for those around you, you want them to thrive, right? And so just try to spread a little of that and try to get them sprinkling it into their lives. Because sometimes we just need a little, right? Maybe we just need to swing our right arms and they're going to feel better. So the more that we can sprinkle in, and your dad told me one time, he was doing a manual technique and he looked at me and he said, now I've got my left adductor on and I'm breathing with the patient. I'm treating myself as I treat the patient. And I'm like, okay, I got it. You know, so I treat myself whether I treat my patients, but I also do my set of exercises before I go to the gym and get my alternating activity going.
Well, that was probably one of the only leading questions I meant to ask is, you know, knowing you, Joan, and again, we only know the PRI, you know, we know our version of Joan, but knowing you, you're just like us and you go home and you sleep, eat and drink. By the way, it's not just PRI. It's just like, you know, integration and life. You know, we're all just trying to get off and go see our families and do the things we love. And, so that really was kind of a leading question, because I know we all do that, and everyone within our close PRI community does that. And it's just, there's always, you know, for example, Jen Poulin has a couple college age daughters right now. And, you know, we have people with teens, and I was one of those, and, you know, I grew up with it. And it's like, how do we get our loved ones? You love your patients, but you really love your family. And it's like, you know, how do we get them to appreciate everything we appreciate? And sometimes you don't, but it's always fun to hear of the at-home PRI table talk, but you know, I appreciate your time that we had today, Joan. You know, I don't know if you have anything coming up, but we're really excited about, you know, continued resources and even privies we filmed as recently as yesterday, and just techniques and really that consistency. You know, again, your example of just, you know, take advantage of what's out there and watch the weekly privy if you're looking for that. And if you're not, you may only need that right arm swing, or you may only need that pair of shoes.
Yeah. And
so that's why, you know, you make us smile. You're refreshing to the community, because that's what it's all about. And you may not need the full, whatever PRI picture is in your mind, whatever perception you have of PRI, you may need to just alternate, or you may need to just breathe, and you may need to get outside and swing your arms or do some boxing or whatever it may be. And I think you're a literally a walking example of that. So thanks again, Joan, for your time. You know, again, I mentioned earlier that you're in Sioux Falls, and really there's not a whole lot of clinical history to tell people, because you have been at and I don't know if it has remained Physical Therapy Solutions all these years. And
now it's Sanford Physical Therapy Solutions.
Sanford Physical Therapy Solutions. And again, commend you on that by itself. You've done some amazing work, you know, and really opened the door for PRI in the hospital setting. There's never a one-sided street, as you know, and they've allowed you opportunities and you've allowed them opportunities. And that's what we hope the same exists in our culture and our community. But again, you've done a lot, both for others, and we hope that we do as much for you. But again, thank you for just sharing some of your experience. And for anyone that wants to get to know you better, just take an advanced or a annual symposium or attend a few courses in Lincoln, and you'll probably get to know Joan. But thanks again. And it's great to sit down and talk with you, and hopefully our listeners were able to get something out of that. So
thanks, RJ.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.